Previously with Martin Bester.
There's been so much talk and so many stories that we've shared with you as well over the last while about kids, their mental health, the stress, the pressure they're under, the bullying, the effects of social media that it has on them, and just pressure in general, not to mention, of course, COVID stress and pressure. So we decided to invite into the studio this morning clinical psychologist Candace Cowan. Candace, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, thanks for joining us. You are in the middle of it. You deal with it. Let's just quickly start with COVID and the effect that it has had on children specifically. Have you noticed a change in kids' behavior since COVID started?
Sure. I mean, I think the carpet was pulled under, you know, kids' feet last year. We went from a world where we were interacting to completely online standstill. Parents didn't know what was going on. Our country didn't know what was going on. So they went from normal interactions at school to being at home with parents all the time. I think the lack of structure, the lack of predictability, not knowing what was going to happen, the scary virus that everyone's talking about, you know, the masks, just everything completely changed for kids. And I just think I'm seeing a lot more anxiety, a lot more mental health issues in terms of getting kids back to almost a normal routine again, because what's next? You know, it's still unpredictable. We're still in the midst of the pandemic.
And it's the not knowing. It's actually for kids. Now that you say it, I'm thinking for them to look at adults and see that adults don't know. Because normally a kid would look at an adult for answers and for stability. Now they see adults around them and really, you know, educated ones, not knowing.
Sure. And I mean, we have our family meetings with the president all the time, and he's quite calm in his tone, and he's quite, you know, he makes us feel calm and confident about it. But a lot of times in households, parents aren't. You know, parents are like now having to, you know, find Wi-Fi to do work online. They're having to deal with running a home, working full time, entertaining kids, making sure they're okay. A lot of adults aren't okay. A lot of adults are experiencing burnout, you know, fatigue. And kids see that, and kids get exposed to that.
I suppose that's the one upside of the last year, better Wi-Fi at home.
Yes.
For kids, they're like, yes, finally, now you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Okay, so there's COVID. When it comes to peer pressure, I mean, peer pressure has always been there. Mm-hmm. You had to think when you go back to school, peer pressure has always been there. Has it become worse?
I think peer pressure in terms of, you know, kind of how to fit in and kind of how to, you know, whether it's the newest online game and to fit in with that, that's definitely has increased. Peer pressure is developmentally appropriate. I mean, in that age, the biggest goal that we have developmentally is to socialize and a need for belonging. So kids are more vulnerable to peer pressure at specific ages. And yes, I mean, kids are being influenced by how other households are run, by other choices that kids are making. And it's difficult, in I think, in today's society to stand up to that, you know, especially you mentioned bullying earlier, and in that regard, peer pressure, you know, kids, it's hard to stand up, it's hard to kind of like be an individual, and it's easier to conform.
Bit of a catch 22, because I would think then being at home and in lockdown, they are away from their peers, so they wouldn't feel that pressure, but at the same time, they need to socialize at that age.
100%. I mean, it's one of the main aims is to socialize.
Yeah.
That real-time feedback that you're getting from social interactions is what shapes us. You know, it shapes our personalities. It gives us information about the world. And yeah, we have screen time where it's instant gratification.
Mm.
You know, there's no filter. It's instantly, I feel this, I think this. And remember, with kids, especially teenagers, that they're very impulsive. You know, so often there's not that delayed reaction to think, should I post this, should I not? So they want that real feedback straight right away about how I'm feeling. I'm going to put it out there without any kind of care and consideration at times.
Which age group has it the worst right now in South Africa? Which age group of kids are suffering the most from mental health challenges and other stresses?
Sure. I'm seeing a lot in my practice. I'm seeing that pre-adolescent age group, which is about from 10 till 13, 10 to 14. For me, it's they need activity. They need to be out. They need to be with their peers. And there's not, you know, the lack of structure completely through them. Anxiety is heightened at this time of the age group. And it's hard for them to kind of understand what's going on.
So 10 to 14. Khada, you're a mom. Which question would you want to hear?
We spoke about it at a group of our moms, and there was one mother who told us that she had to bribe her 16-year-old to have some sort of a birthday party. She had to tell her 16-year-old, you will have a birthday party. And we all agreed that we're sitting with the same problem. And we don't know whether it's because the kids are scared and they don't want to, or whether they've just become too complacent with sitting at home and they're speaking to their friends over PlayStation and they don't have to go out. Whether you are the irresponsible parent if you tell your son, you will have a birthday party, I'm forcing you to have one. Or whether it's just that trying to make sense of being scared and being a new normal. Or making peace with the new normal. But I mean, teenagers don't want to go out like they used to.
Are they generally asocial, or have they become more asocial? Is it because of COVID or social media? What's here? What's
happening? I mean, how the roles have reversed. I mean, normally it's the kids putting demands on parents. You know,
I want a party.
Yes, exactly. And us kind of negotiating with them. But now it's us kind of getting them to interact face to face, which is quite tricky. And I think a lot of kids are experiencing what I see as social anxiety. Mm. It's almost like we've lost momentum in social skills. You know, so when we talk, when we interact, when we engage people's body feedback, it's kids have lost that over a whole year. A whole year can make a big difference when kids are little.
At that age, a year makes a massive difference.
Sure. So I think it's one, the world is unsafe still. You know, we're still not quite sure about, you know, how we're almost in a potential third wave, you know. So do we go out? Do we socialize? Parents are still a bit hesitant. So I think it's often parents' reluctance, you know, what should we be doing? But kids also have now realized that, well, I can just have this online interaction and that's okay. Because remember, with online interaction, social media, it still activates that reward center in our brain just as much as other pleasurable activities do, right? So it feels good. So why should I now push myself to do something I don't really want to do?
And the parents say the same thing. I don't have to go to meetings anymore. I can just do it on Zoom. So they're like, hey, I don't have to go to a party anymore. I can just hook them up on social media.
Sure, and I'm finding in therapy as well. A lot of my adult clients, they're preferring to do online sessions, which I naturally like to do the face to face sessions. But people are doing it because of convenience, right? So people are saying, well, I don't have to leave home, or I don't have to leave the office at this time, so let me do the online stuff. So even that's shifted.
And in psychology, you'd lose so much.
Right, and that's that interaction, you know, where you...
Body language and...
Of course.
And that kind of thing. Right now in the world, what is the biggest threat to kids' mental health, would you say?
I would say the uncertainty with the pandemic specifically.
Really?
I also think the fast-pacedness of the world, you know, so as technology develops and as the demands and the pressures change, you know, parents' mental health is being reduced. I mean, with the demands on them, financial pressures, just in South Africa specifically, you know, just what we need to face. But generally just the uncertainty, you know, it's not something that there's some structure and predictability of what's going to be happening soon.
But also social media, surely. I mean, the anxiety and the manipulation it has with adults, you know, will people like you? Why are people liking you today less than, you know, yesterday? Do I look good? One bad comment, even if you get like 1,000 great comments, it's that one bad comment that, you know, stuck with certain people and gets them down. Now, you're an adult. Imagine with kids, you're already unsure, self-aware.
Remember, your brain's very vulnerable during this time of development, right?
So we've got insecure.
Of course. I mean, we have got our self-esteem developing. Our personalities are still developing. We've got mental health that we have to deal with, anxiety, depression. And remember, social media acts as a kind of like reward system, like I mentioned earlier. So think about it like this. Social media can be like a slot machine. So if adults, we go to a casino and we play the slot machine, we don't know every single time that we'll get money. You know, we don't know, but there's a potential reward, right? So like if we do win, then that feels great.
Yeah.
Social media is the same. So if I post something and I get a like, or if I get 100 likes, that feels so good, right? Or the feedback saying, oh, you're looking so good. But it's not. So oftentimes what happens is that one negative comment, people will then link onto that and kind of, you know, go with that. That's what they take away from the impacts of the social media. Oftentimes I've heard in therapy where kids are saying that they feel down after social media, but they can't get off of it. You know,
it's
addictive because of that kind of, maybe I'll get a reward, but the minute they get that negative feedback, it damages their self-esteem.
But how do you stop that? How do you change that? I know that Instagram is experimenting in the world. I think it's Australia, for instance, where they take away the likes, the option to like. So you just share and people look at it. It's like an Insta story.
Pretty
much. I like Insta stories.
Yeah,
but
and
there's
it's,
no pressure there.
It's you great just, that they're doing that. It's great that they're trying to adapt it. However, you know, that's not going to take it away completely because we still are comparing by posting, by viewing people's stories. And remember that a lot of times people post things that overinflate how their lifestyle is. So oftentimes, you know.
Sometimes. All the time.
They often will have it where I'm posting things because I want to portray a certain light. And remember that, you know, when it comes to preteens and teenagers' bodies that are developing, you know, just the idea of what your body should look like really gets, you know, you get affected negatively if you don't fit into that mold.
That's why I'm so proud of people like Will Smith. Mm-hmm. Did you see what he's doing currently?
Mm-hmm.
He's posting shirtless pictures. He's pushing out his stomach and just showing people how out of shape he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that he is comfortable doing it.
Yeah, but then the opposite side of that is him saying, I'm at my worst now and I'm going to get so much better.
Oh, you see.
So he's now on this fitness journey. I think it's a 10-week journey where he's going to go from that to Mr. Abs again.
Mm. See, Mark Wahlberg's doing the same thing. I hear what you're saying.
And it's difficult. I guess that what they're trying to challenge is almost an effect that I've seen in therapy and that I hear from people, imposter syndrome, right? So it's like this chronic self-doubt, this chronic, you know, I need to uphold a certain facade, right? So because the fear of being exposed as a fraud, right, in terms of success or how well I'm doing or how clever I am or how I look, it drives a lot of anxiety in kids. So I guess they're trying to say, well, this is me, unfiltered, this is who I am, you don't have to put on a show.
Is the world strong enough to realize that it is bad for kids, it has a huge negative impact on them, and to ban social media until a certain age? As a parent, What is your recommendation?
I mean, it's difficult because, I mean, this is what our kids' generation is exposed to. You know, technology's everywhere. You actually can't get away from it.
Yeah.
So, yes, I do think that there should be boundaries and almost like a monitoring system put into place.
What age?
I think, you know, as a lot of people will ask me in therapy, how much technology time or when should I get my child a phone? I think it depends on the child. So you might have kids that can, you know, emotionally cope with certain things. So there might be confidence, enough social skills, you know, to deal with it. I mean, if you've got a child with anxiety, that wouldn't naturally be my first option, is to give a phone as soon as you can, because they cannot handle that content. So yes, you can sit with them and you can monitor it with them and put rules in place, like, you know, I'll take the phone at a certain time, or you get it for an hour in the day. And as they get older, increase it. But, you know, it's no hard and fast rule. I think it's different for each child.
Some questions coming in as
well. Yeah, I also, because my younger sister is in her teens, and I always wonder, would there be something, I don't know, like a handbook to parents to have them understand what kids are going through right now? Because generally when I have conversations with my mom and my sister, I see how far removed my mom is from understanding what someone her age is going through when it comes to Instagram and social media and any kind of platform where a parent then doesn't get it, so a youngster doesn't go to their parents.
Yeah, I mean, I wish there was almost like a middleman to kind of bridge the gap between the generations, but there's not.
Well, that's you, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's in therapy. That's what I do.
And it's but parents' responsibility, I think.
It is, but it's also, you know, for parents to listen. You know, I think older generations are kind of, they weren't exposed to it, so they don't get it. But the thing is, we can't say it's all bad. Our kids are exposed to it, and they're part of it. You know, there's also that FOMO, you know, so if your child's not exposed to a certain platform and kids are talking about it at school, they feel excluded, you know, and that's really hard for them. So instead of just, you know, saying it's all bad, rather sit down, be patient and listen and ask questions. You know, ask them, tell me more about it, you know, open communication, because in that way you can kind of monitor it.
Questions coming in on 084 850 0942.
Good morning, Yakaranda. Great show. Fantastic topic. A big concern of mine is that I've also been working from home for over a year. How do I prepare myself when I have to return to office? I see definitely in my kids the anxiety before they get back to school after a week of being at home. How can I help my kids also to reduce this anxiety? Sure. Thank you.
Well, I mean, there's going to be different demands when you go back to work versus being at home, like the same for kids, right? So there's going to be changing classes, there's going to be break time, certain times that you eat. Sometimes when we've been at home during lockdown, all of those structural things have gone out the window. So I guess it would be almost implementing just a normal daily routine that might mimic a work day or a school day.
Okay. Getting dressed in the morning, don't do your entire day in pajamas?
Yeah, sure. Getting dressed, putting on makeup, doing specific activities, eating at a certain time, you know, getting out the house. So, you know, even if it's slowly but surely going out to the shop and coming back, you know, eventually you start getting used to what it feels like to be out of home.
Bullying is a massive topic right now in the world. And of course, I think it is amplified by the fact that they take videos of the bullying. So now first you're bullied physically and then you're humiliated on social media. It's like a double whammy.
Yeah, so it's like the physical bullying and the cyberbullying.
Yeah, all in one. How do you prepare your child? How do you deal with it as a parent?
So, I mean, we were chatting earlier and bullying doesn't go away. You know, it's almost part of life. And why I say this is because if you look at, you know, developmentally at little kids, you know, what are tantrums about? What are, you know, meltdowns about? Oftentimes kids are trying to communicate something, but they're also trying to like get their own way. You know, so if my little one's throwing a tantrum, it's because I've said no to a sweet. You know, he wants that. You know, he's going to just like do whatever he needs to do to get it. The same goes as kids get older. You know, bullying really essentially is about getting your needs met, but oftentimes through aggression, whether it's popularity or dominance.
Manipulation,
of course. You know, and the thing is, bystanders watching videos, it's difficult to stand up, you know, so we can't really expect other kids to stand up and help so much because of out of fear. So I think it starts at home. For me, always when I talk about bullying, it needs to be, you need to have conversations at home. You need to equip kids with information about how to deal with bullying, how to identify bullying, you know, what does it feel like? What would you do if you're in this situation? Scenario plan with kids.
Prepare them.
Sure.
On the line is Stephen. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning.
Your daughter, you've got a daughter, she's 11 years old. We're talking about bullying. Is that something quite relevant to you right now?
Yes, it is relevant to me now at the moment with my daughter, yes, currently.
Tell us about it.
Well, she's now 11 years old and there's a lot of kids in her school that calls her bad names and really, really bad names. And even in the sports, peers are saying to her that she's not good enough and that, and she's fat and ugly and stuff. And when we reported to the teachers are using bullying as an excuse now and a term that the kids are just learning. And they're using that for everything now. And when we approach the teachers, they seem to shrug it off, basically. And we don't know where further to go to, because even the principal seems to be helping the teachers block everything and avoid everything, basically, yeah.
So I'm so sorry that your daughter's going through that. I think it's difficult for girls, especially that age group, you know, to not be body shamed or to not feel excluded. And remember, that's girls' MO. They, at that age, they try and exclude other females, and it's difficult. I think you've done what I would have suggested, which is speak to the teachers. And I don't know if it's a matter of maybe, you know, making a one-on-one with a teacher that you can maybe communicate with. I mean, obviously the school needs to be implementing some kind of, you know, repercussions or kind of programs,
system.
A bully system. And I think it's about not just walking away and kind of expecting your child to deal with it. I'm glad you have helped her, because oftentimes we mistake kind of telling kids to stand up for yourself or just ignore it. They've probably already tried that stuff. It's for adults to stop the bullying, you know, so we need to, as a parent, I think I'd really encourage you to try and connect with the teacher that you feel more comfortable with. Maybe it's a matter of timing, but also to drive your point home that you're unhappy about it and she's unhappy and they need to do something. You need to call them to account.
You know what I would do? I don't have kids, so you can tell me if it's right or wrong. I would go to the parents of the kids who bully.
But then you start, then it becomes a fighting between the parents, because as he says, she says.
Well, I mean, oftentimes schools will facilitate discussions like that. So I agree. So maybe not going direct, because, I mean, they might respond with a bit of, you know, like, I'm on the attack.
Okay, sure.
You know, exactly. So you might want to, you know, ask a teacher that if you had to have a sit down amongst adults and just discuss the fact that topics of what's going on and solutions of how we can resolve this, you know.
Because I remember at school, the biggest bullies parents never knew. They thought their kids were angels.
Sure.
That's true.
I really, really did.
All think the best of our kids.
Yeah. Yeah. And they might get their backs up at first and be all defensive.
Yeah.
But at some point, give it an hour or two or a day or two,
they will
question it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, they will think, well, maybe my son or my daughter is actually a bully.
Exactly. And I also think it's important for parents to acknowledge that. My mom did the same thing where she was like, "Nee mama, Mikaela's nie so en ons doen nie." I was like, "No, but this child is not with us during this time. There's none of us watching her. So she knows that whatever happens is, like you said, a he said, she said, and we have to acknowledge the fact that possibly this could be happening."
Yeah. Stephen,
When would you go to the Department of Education then?
Sure.
I mean, that's obviously, you know, if you've really tried to speak to the school, I mean, there's you know, not much you can do. I guess you could also, you know, ask them in terms of suggesting them to get organizations to come in to speak to the school. Yeah. I know that, you know, organization I affiliate with, South African Depression and Anxiety Group, SADAG, that they go and they do school programs where they sit and they talk, you know, so it's not singling out kids, but in general, implementing a school talk to kind of educate children as well as educators, because it might be that the teachers don't know how to deal with that.
True.
You know, so I understand like wanting to go to the social department, but there's a few other things that you can maybe try before then.
Other parents? Do the other parents feel the same way, Stephen? Have you connected with other parents that have the same concerns?
We haven't approached them yet because we're too scared to have the aggressiveness and he says, she said. So will start doing that.
I mean, other parents that also have their kids.
There is other parents that has informed us that their kids are being bullied by the same kids as well. So we're starting to build a group now. Strength of numbers.
Yeah. And you say to the principal, you may not have to take me seriously, but you have to take so-and-so and so-and-so, all of us. We have the same concern, because I think then, you know, they have to take it seriously.
I mean, they have to put the best interests of the child forward, you know, and if you say that developmentally, they need to target this. I mean, this isn't just a school-specific thing. This is kids, and it damages them long term, you know, so they need to prepare them.
And you also can't be a principal who is seen to be facilitating a culture of bullying or looking away from it, ignoring it. Thank you, Stephen. 100%. All the best.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Cheers. Bye.
And just like that, we've run out of time. You should come back soon, because we have lots and lots to discuss, obviously, when it comes to kids' mental health.
It's endless.
And bullying especially. So, so many, many questions. Thank you for your time. Much appreciated.
It's only a pleasure. Thanks for having me. I look forward to the next time.
Yes, super. Our clinical psychologist guest this morning, Candace Cowan. And if you have more questions on WhatsApp, maybe you'll ask her just to hang for 5 minutes and answer some of those for you, maybe on social media. Get the answers from her and share it with you. 084-850-0942.
Wake up with you next to me. Wake up with Martin Bester on Breakfast. Your morning family.